Alright. Well, welcome back. My name is Tarek. I'm the alcoholic addict. And I want to read something, and then we're going to meditate. When I think of steps 10 and 11, I always think of this reading. It's called Practice. Spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practice for the day, then you have won. If you're lazy for the day, then you have lost. Self-cultivation is the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic initiations, or sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those things are only highlights in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it is prayer, then pray every day. If it is meditation, then meditate every day. If it is exercise, then exercise every day. Only then will you be able to say that you are truly practicing spirituality. This methodical approach is reassuring in several ways. First, it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress, even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just to practice is already good. Secondly, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you will gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say to yourself that you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back on years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum that has that practice has given you?
Meditation. Prayer.
God, please lay aside everything I think I know about this weekend. The big book, alcoholism, addiction, the 12 steps, myself, and especially you, God, so I may have an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth. Amen.
I'm going to cover step 10 this afternoon, and Brandon's going to cover step 11, but the reading that I read before the meditation has to do with both steps. There is no arrival place in any of this work, more so in these two steps, because we, as addicts and alcoholics, we want a result and we want it now. And that's just not going to happen with step 10 or step 11. They're constantly evolving, fluid steps. I mean, I could literally sit up here and spend the rest of today talking about step 10. And Brandon could spend the next day talking about step 11. That's how much material there is here. This step and step 11 are like an abyss. I'm gonna let Brandon wants to touch on something real quick. I'll come back.
So we were trying to get you guys out of here last night. We did. There's two myths that want to smash around the ninth step. If everybody look, pulls their book out and turns to page 76. So in that third full paragraph, it says, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9, okay? So that's where steps 8 and 9 start, okay? Now turn over to page 84. The first line says, this thought brings us to step 10. So are we real clear where steps 8 and 9 start and where step 10 starts, which means that right before step 10 starts, that must be the end of step 9. So if we turn back to page 83, the bottom of the page, this is where they find those hidden, quote, AA promises, end quote. What step do they fall under? The ninth step, right? Because that's where they're contained within the book. So one of the things that is thought, or was thought by me when I showed up here, was that when I'm halfway through with something, these promises will come true, right? But it was never explained to me properly, and I'm going to save you guys that. So what if the ninth step promises were read this way? Because this is the way that I think they're really supposed to be read. If we are painstaking about our amends, we will be amazed before we are halfway through with our amends. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness as the result of making amends. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it as a result of making amends. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace as a result of making amends. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others as a result of making amends. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear as a result of making amends. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows as a result of making amends. Self-seeking will slip away as a result of making amends. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change as a result of making amends. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. Why? Because we paid the people back and we're not worried about them coming after us anymore. Because we've made amends. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us as a result of making amends. And we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves because we went and saw all those people that wanted to kick our asses and kill us and want to never see us again. And God took us safe and protected through that experience. So as a result of making the amends. Okay, we don't read them that way, and people cannot understand why they hang out for a little while and these ninth step promises don't show up in their life. Give you one clue. They're not making amends. Okay, so the step also says we make direct amends. Okay. Direct means like we go to them, to their face, see them person to person. Okay? This idea that somewhere has permeated the rooms of our fellowships of this living amends. Okay? Well, you know, I'm no longer acting like a jerk, so that's my living amends. No, no longer acting like a jerk is practicing the principles in all your affairs. That is the 12th step. Has nothing to do with the 9th step. The book's real clear when it says all. We talked about this earlier. Does anybody know what all means?
Every single one of them.
Made direct amends to all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. My sponsor does not determine whether or not an amend is owed. And my sponsor will tell you in more cases than I can come up with that I owe an amend for that, right? That is between God and I and that other person, okay? So I've heard people say that my sponsor says the amend that I'm making to that woman is to never go and see her again and stay out of her life. Says who? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of our troubles. So that means that my sponsor and I are determining whether or not that person needs to be made whole. Shouldn't we make that up to them? Now, if I call them multiple times and reach out to them and they reject my calls and they don't want to see me, they've made their choice. They don't want me to see them. That is up to them. I don't choose that. We could go through and dissect all of the different scenarios that the ninth step says of when we go to people, but it's pretty much in every case. If they're dead, there's ways to make amends to people that are dead. You can go do it by their graveside. I can tell you about some of the guys in my network that have had the most miraculous, incredible experiences making amends to people that are not there. There is not a single case where an amend cannot be made. If you're going to go to jail for it, the book's real clear. Do it. 2 Schedule 1 felonies. Poof. You can trust God or not. This is where trusting God really shows up. Living amends are not mentioned in the book, and it's a bunch of crap made up by a bunch of people that are too afraid to actually go see the people that they wronged. That's it. There's no other reason that this concept of living amends came up. Well, she harmed me more than I harmed her. Book's real clear. We disregard the other person entirely. If this conversation between me and you that's very one-sided right now is not clear, I would love to discuss this more with you. But the living amends and the ninth step promises, those are around the ninth step, and I thought that we should address those then. So now Tarek will talk to you about the 10th step.
First time I got sober in Joe and Charlie type AA. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's actually quite incredible. But the 10th step is a place where what I do now deviates from what I did then. I forget who it was this weekend, but somebody told me they were doing a 10th step every night. And I said, okay, we're going to talk about this later in the weekend. Because it's not a 10th step that I do every night. When I do evening review, it's part of the 11th step, and Brandon's going to get real specific on that. But the first time I went, I was sitting in a big book study. It's a big book workshop, and we were going through the 10th step. And the way they broke it down, it was like the 10th step as it's laid out in the big book, it looks a lot like you're doing steps 4 through 9. And I get that. And it is that. But it's also something else, because how do we stay awake all day long? How do we have intent and vision all day long? How do we observe ourselves in relationships with other people all day long? This is what the 10th step's about. What happened is when Bill Wilson wrote the 12 and 12, I think it was almost 15 years after the big book came out, when they wrote the chapter about the 10th step, he literally called it a asset and liability inventory, a spot check inventory, and an inventory of your day. There was 3 types of inventories. But he also says something that's quite profound in that chapter. He says that, you know, although inventory and prayer and meditation when done separately are amazing, could you imagine if you lived a life where you walked your day in inventory, in prayer, and in meditation, all at the same time? And so that's the way I look at the 10th step. So what I want to do is I want to read in the book on page 84, and then I'm going to take something from 2 other books because it translates into the 10th step. Now, the way we're going to look at the 10th step, it's not an inventory at the end of the day. It is a walking around inventory as you live your life. You're taking an inventory of yourself as you walk. So how do we do this? So this thought of making amends brings us to the 10th step. which it suggests we continue to take personal inventory and we continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So the short form of the step is continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And if you go to a 10-step meeting, the majority of the time people are going to talk about admitting when they were promptly admitting when they were wrong or taking an inventory at the end of the day. And it's much, much more than that. We vigorously, with energy, commence this way of living as we clean up the past. Two references to making amends. We've entered the world of the spirit. So the way I look at it, the first 9 steps, that prep work, were the launching pad into the world of the spirit. That's what they are. The first 9 steps are the launching pad into the world. So it's like you open a door, and it's between this realm and the spiritual realm. But the spiritual realm has a language to it. And this language of the spiritual realm, I believe, is steps 10 and 11. Because they're totally foreign to somebody until you walk into the world of the spirit.
So, how many therapy sessions do you think your therapist would recommend that you go to enter the world of the spirit? Just curious.
See, you can't sell a spiritual experience to an insurance company. So, that's why nobody stresses this stuff. Okay?
Oops.
So, let's see. We entered the world of the spirit. Our next function... not maintenance. It says our next function is to grow, not maintain, to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I think they're really talking about understanding the spiritual realm so I can be more effective in the human realm. This is not an overnight matter, so that indicates to me that I'm not doing this just at the end of the day. It should continue for the rest of my lifetime. So here's the fear. If I'm sponsoring you and we're doing this work in this book, it says continue to watch. Watch for what? As I'm engaging with people, I'm watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. So I've got a guy who's about to come up on the 10th step, and the way I would work with him is we're going to read all of this together. I'm going to share my insights with him, and then I'm going to say, I want you to get a note card, 3x5. I need 5 or 6 of them, and you're going to write the word watch. And you're going to put it on your nightstand. You're going to put one in your pocket at all times. You're going to put one on your mirror in your bathroom. One's going to go on your dashboard. One's going to go at your office at work. I want you to be able to see it in all the places you're spending the majority of your time throughout a day. And you're going to, for 1 week, I don't want you to do anything but watch what's going on internally with you. Are there certain people that you start to encounter that bring up selfishness or bring you on the brinks of being dishonest or bring up a ton of fear in you? For 1 week, you're just going to watch. That's all I want you to do. 1 week. And then we are going to continue to watch. And then when these crop up, at once, we're going to ask God to remove them. It doesn't say God's going to remove them, but the practice is to begin a dialogue where I'm turning to my Creator. So in week 2, there's a note cards get replaced. The new note cards have watch/ask. So now I want you practicing watch and ask. So that's a new practice. Discuss them with someone immediately. This is where the concept of 10th step buddies come from. So Brandon and I 10th step on a regular basis. I've got a handful of other guys that I 10th step with. What that means is these guys pretty much know what I'm struggling with because I speak to them so often about what I'm struggling with. And they're like... Brandon's job on the phone with me is to show me how every trouble I have is of my own making. And that's what we do in our network. So I've got guys that come through my program, and part of being at the launching pad is you have to develop relationships with people outside of your program. I don't want them dependent on the launching pad. They need to build relationships outside of the program because the program's just not going to be there all the time. These guys come to these programs and you go back home somewhere and you don't have the confidence to build new relationships. You need to have the confidence to build new relationships. So they're required to develop 3 10th step buddies that don't have anything to do with our program. And sometimes they pick guys that I don't know. And I'm always weary of that because not everybody's going to 10th step the same way. You know, let's say Brandon calls me up and he's sideways with somebody in his life. I can't take their side. My job is to never be on Brandon's side. Never. Okay? I always have to be on the side of how did you create this situation to the best I can. I don't think we've run into many situations where I couldn't do that.
No.
So.
Why is that? So you don't push on their BS?
Well, remember the greatest statement of hope in the big books, your troubles are all of your own making?
Yeah.
So that's where I drive guys to. Because if the trouble is of someone else's making, then you can't get free. Right? But if the trouble's of your own making, it doesn't matter, man, what the people in the world do or what the world does, you can get free. You can be okay. If it's someone else's fault, then you got to wait for them to come apologize to you to be okay, or come take ownership of what they did to be okay. Okay? So discuss with someone immediately. You make amends quickly if you've harmed anyone. So I've been doing this for so long. When I harm somebody over the course, like I'll be on the phone. Okay, this is classic, right? A lot of these customer service is done overseas now. So I get on the phone with somebody who can't speak English. And I get really frustrated sometimes when I'm on the phone with these customer service people. And I'll rip their heads off at the very beginning of the conversation. But my 10th step kicks in so quickly that I'm already saying, hey, I know you're trying to do your job. This has nothing to do with you. I'm so sorry that I raised my voice with you. Right? Now, the word sorry, when you're doing an active 10th step like that quickly, I think it's okay. You know, but when you're making an amends that's 10 years old, they don't want to hear the word sorry.
They agree you're sorry.
Yeah. So, we're in week 2, watch and ask. And then they come up with this last sentence. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. So in week 3, the note cards are going to say watch/ask/turn. So now we're watching, we're communicating with our higher power, and we're turning our thoughts back to what we were doing maybe. Or we're turning our thoughts to what we want to be. Remember the fear that Brandon talked about that he loves so much? God, please remove my fear. Direct my attention to what you would have me be. That is incorporated into my 10th step as I walk through the day. Now look, guys, what I am describing to you right now is the hardest step to practice.
Amen.
Just because I'm doing a good job of describing it does not mean I do a good job of practicing it. All right? I practice. That's all I can tell you to do is practice, practice, practice. And it gets better, better, and better. I've been practicing this now for, you know, over 8 years. So I'm way better than I was 8 years ago. But I'm not nearly as good as I'm going to be 8 years from now. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right. And so then love and tolerance of others is our code. This is a 10th step practice. And then here's the last one we'll do with the note cards. And you've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, cocaine, meth, and heroin. For by this time, sanity will have returned. So, the fourth week of this practice, they're doing watch, ask, turn, and stop fighting. All right? There's a man that I love, this book here, The Power of Now. And his definition of suffering is resistance to what is. To me, that says that our fighting of what's in front of us is typically the source of our suffering. Okay, now, I'm a guy that makes a distinction between suffering and struggle. If you want more insight into that, you have to pull me aside.
Who writes that book you were just
Eckhart Tolle. Eckhart Tolle. Or Eckhart Tolle. Never really quite.
That's just like a power of
So... now we're going to enter. That's the 10-step practice, guys. That's it right there. That's part of it. Are you going to wrap vision back into your step?
Yeah.
Okay. And so now I want to read the most powerful promises in the big book. At my two home groups, we don't even read the 9-step promises. We read the 10-step promises because this is where it's at right here. So we will seldom be interested in drugs and alcohol. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. That means it's automatic. We don't make a choice. Do you actually make a choice to take your hand off something hot, or do you automatically do it as soon as you feel it?
Boom.
You don't sit there and contemplate. Let's see, that's about 80 degrees, 90 degrees. Oh, now I'm going to make a choice to take my hand off the
hot
stove.
I think my skin is searing. Oh, no. I should probably move my hand.
All right. We react sanely and normally, and we'll find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards drugs and alcohol has been given us without any effort, thought or effort on our part. The thought and effort on the steps is around your selfishness and your self-centeredness, if you really think about it. The first half of the first step is the only place we really talk about drugs and alcohol. Now, they wrap steps back into alcohol, you know. In the third step, right before you go into the steps, it says that, you know, alcohol is cunning, baffling, powerful. You must find God now. You know, and in the ninth step, they talk about, you know, not overcoming our alcoholism until we make our amends. We must not shrink at anything. So there is something to do with these steps. Because you hear people sometimes in the meetings say that everything after the first half of the first step is all God. But they're connecting that if there's not a lot of God in your life, you're going to have a lot of alcohol and drugs in your life. They keep telling you, in order to be victorious over alcoholism, you have to make these amends. Right? You must find God now. And actually, the book now says, may you find him now. In the original manuscript, it said, you must find him now. I'm a purist, so I will go with, you must find him now. Okay, I just think it... I'm more of a guy that wants to tell you the truth. I don't want to sugarcoat it for you. And so the thought and effort as you work the steps is not really focused on the drugs and the alcohol. There is a focus that all of this underlies falling out of power. You're not going to have power to stay clean and sober, and you'll revert back to drugs and alcohol. But when you guys are talking about step two and three, there's your spiritual concepts that are being contemplated. Inventory is about seeing how you've created every shit show in your life. Right? The fifth step is learning about how to be transparent and accountable and authentic and giving yourself to someone for the first time in your life and God. Six and seven is about, you know, I'm not okay with how I show up. God, I can't change myself. Can you please change me? Step nine is about connecting with other people and repairing the damage. So this is... the thought and effort is not on just not drinking and just not getting high. It's much deeper than that. That's the miracle of it. Brandon and I sit up here this morning and we're not fighting it. We're not avoiding temptation. You know, I mean, I was married for almost 7 years with an amazing woman. Nothing I say about this woman means anything negative. She just, she partied a lot. There was always some form of a mind-altering substance on some capacity in the house, and liquor and alcohol all the time. I hung out there for 7 years straight. In fit spiritual condition, never once was I tempted. I went through 5 surgeries, put on opiates every single time. I had a kidney stone blasted full of morphine. I lost my father. Our house was broken into. I've dealt with identity theft. I had to put our dog out down while my wife was out of town. My daughter started having seizures, so we were in the hospital for 2.5 days learning how to cope with a kid that has epilepsy. I battled debilitating depression, couldn't get out of bed for 4 days. Blinds were closed, calling sick to work. All of that in the midst of being in a house with alcohol and drugs.
You had identity theft, your house got broken into, did you say those?
Yeah, well, moved in with my parents in the basement, yeah. Yeah. So.
No big deal. We're good here.
I mean, come on, guys. I'm not.
If external circumstances are going to lead you to drinking or using, he had them. He didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Must not be the circumstances.
I'm not fighting it. I'm not avoiding temptation. All the guys in my network knew what was going on. I was 10-stepping with them on a regular basis. I was engaging my prayer and meditation life. I continued to work with sponsees, and I went to very few meetings in that time period. I was laid up on crutches. Oh, I forgot about the knee surgery, too.
Yeah. Tweaked my knee. I have to go back on the drugs. Just want to let you guys know. We'd get texts like that. Taking a couple more today. Full communication. 10th step.
Transparency, guys. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I knew I was safe and protected because I remember I was on day 2 of taking Percocets, and I started to watch my mind change, and my mind was saying to, I was listening to a voice say, if you tell Marcy it's been 4 hours, but it's only been 2.5 hours, she's not really paying attention, so yeah. she'll give you another pill, right? Or you wait till she goes upstairs and you find out where she's putting the pills and you just go get 2 more. As soon as I saw that, because I'm in fit spiritual condition, immediately I moved away. And it wasn't like I made a choice. The protection and the safety that I experienced from my higher power moved me away from it. It wasn't like I weighed out the consequences. I was done and I moved away. I passed the kidney stone on Tylenol. So how big is your God, I guess is the question I should be asking. Can he only take care of some stuff and not everything? I don't know. We've not even sworn off. Instead, this problem has been removed, the illusion that I have a choice. It doesn't exist for me. I'm not cocky nor am I afraid. This is my experience. And this is how I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. So, I'm going to read the first few sentences. No?
What?
I'm going to read the first few.
Keep going. Yeah.
So, that's the 10-step promises. How cool is that?
Go all the way down to here.
Okay. So, it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our past accomplishments. We're headed for trouble if we do, because crack cocaine and heroin and crystal meth and pills and alcohol are all subtle foes. We're not cured of our alcoholism or drug addiction. So this whole weekend you've heard Brandon, myself, Kelsey, Bill, and Mills refer to being recovered, not cured. The symptoms of addiction and alcoholism have been arrested. The major symptoms, the mental and the physical. The spiritual condition inside that we struggle and wrestle with, that's an ongoing recovery. I get that. Otherwise, we'd become enlightened. But we struggle. We drift into the light and back into the dark. Into the light, back into the dark. Really, they're one and the same, but the human mind doesn't allow you to see that. So, we are not cured. What we really have is a daily stay of execution. That's what reprieve means. A daily stay of execution contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And Brandon's going to get into the next sentence. I'm going to read it. Every day is a day when I must carry a vision of God's will into all my activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with me constantly. I can exercise my willpower along this line is all I wish. It is the proper use of the will. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If you have carefully followed directions, you have begun to sense the flow of God's energy and His Spirit and His power into your life. And to some extent, you've become God-conscious. You've begun to develop a vital sixth sense. We must go further, and that means more action. So the 10th step in practice yesterday, I sat up here. I was looking for these sunglasses. I thought somebody had picked them up. I sat up here.
You sons of bitches stole his glasses.
I sat right here, and I had looked everywhere, and I took a deep breath, and I unfocused my mind. And I said to myself, the first thing that comes back into focus, this is my spirit, my conversation with spirit is where I'm going. And immediately my trunk and the box in my trunk came into view. I went right out there, and that's where my sunglasses were.
After so none of you sons of bitches took them.
why does this line, or can you explain this line, right after you said, how can I best serve thee, thy will, not mine be done, it says, we can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish, it is the proper use of the will. So actually, our will actually does come back into play in the 10th step.
In the terms of the big book, yes, you turn it over on page 63 and you get it back on page 85.
We did a lot of cleaning in the interim, yeah. Though, huh?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. You know, there's a really cool thing I heard one time. This guy was talking about it, and he was like, he was in a meeting one time, and they were reading the promises, and some guy in the meeting goes, Bill, damn it, how do you make those promises on page 83 and 84 come true? And one of the guys in the meeting goes, you do everything between page 1 and page 85. Do everything. But what do people do? They come into these rooms and they work the promises and they wait for the steps to come true. I watch it all the time.
So our will, the proper use of our will is to align it with His.
Yeah. And then if you're doing God's will, where's the choice in that? Then you're literally following direction.
Ooh.
So, let's read these other books that I love so much. This is a book called Drop the Rock, The Ripple Effect, and it's talking about working step 10 and the working steps 6 and 7.
Is that different from Drop the Rock?
It's the sequel.
Oh, wow.
What is the ripple effect? It's the effect we have on other human beings based on what we do or don't do, what we say or don't say, and how we show up in each moment in other people's lives. When we act from one of our shortcomings or character defects, impatience, let's say, we don't just harm ourselves. We send ripples of negativity out into the universe around us. When we first practiced step 6 and 7 wholeheartedly, they transformed us. Step 10 uses step 6 and 7 to ground us in the present, where our humanness or our beingness come together. As we practice step 10 day by day and moment by moment, it continuously transforms us and all of our relationships. We move from establishing a relationship with our higher power to experiencing that power in every human interaction. We move from hearing each step resonate in our head to feeling it in our guts, in our bones, in our blood, and every cell in our bodies. We move from learning the steps to actually living the steps by practicing the 10th step. Most of all, we move from a focus on our own growth and transformation to a focus on how our behavior and actions affect others. This change in focus is what I call the ripple effect. As you do that, a shift in consciousness takes place inside you. As you practice the 10th step and you're trying to watch, ask, turn, stop fighting. Here's why. The inner equivalent to objects in space, such as furniture, walls, and people, and so on, are the mind objects. Thoughts, emotions, and the objects of the senses. And the inner equivalent of space is the consciousness that enables your mind objects to be, just as space allows all things to be. So if you withdraw attention from things, objects, and space, you automatically withdraw attention from your mind objects as well. In other words, you cannot think and be aware of space, or of silence for that matter. By becoming aware of the empty space around you, you simultaneously become aware of the space of no mind, of pure consciousness, the unmanifested. This is how the contemplation of space can become a portal for you. So space and silence are two aspects of the same thing, the same no thing. They are an externalization of inner space and inner silence, which is stillness, the infinitely creative womb of all existence. Most humans are completely unconscious of this dimension. There is no inner space, no stillness. They are out of balance. In other words, they know the world, or they think they do, but they don't know God. They identify exclusively with their own physical and psychological form, unconscious of essence. And because every form is highly unstable, they live in fear. This fear causes a deep misperception of themselves and other humans and their relationships and a distorted view of the world. So how do we bring this attention to discovering consciousness in our daily interaction with people? Because I don't know about you guys, because I'll pray and meditate at home, and then I walk out the door, and it's on, right? I get to Starbucks, I'm like the fifth person back, and this person at the front of the line is just taking their time with the order. I'm just like, come on now, don't you know I got to be at work, and I got to do this, and I got to... So the dialogue starts in my mind. The first time I heard Mark talk about this, then I observed myself at a Starbucks, and I was like, holy shit, he's right. I just did a 30-minute meditation, man. I was rocking and rolling when I left the house. And then I get here, and it's not like that. And so this morning, me and my buddies were doing this meditation. I thought it was fascinating because the guy's like, you know, the meditation is about to be over. But the only thing that's going to change with how you interact with the world from now until throughout the course of the day is that your eyelids are open. Yeah. Your eyelids. So can you take a, you know, Brandon's going to get into meditation, but can we take that stillness into how we interact with people, right? So whoever the young man was that asked me about the 10th step, as you can see clearly, it's much more than inventory. It's not just taking an inventory at the end of the day. This is the walking around step. This is how to stay conscious of God. This is how you cultivate and nurture a relationship with God. Because if you're watching and you're asking and you're turning and you stop fighting, it deepens your experience with your Creator. And that's what we're going for here. This is the hardest step to practice, but it's by far the most important step. Oh, that's a hard thing to say.
It's the most important step to make sure that we're not causing more wreckage in the world.
Yeah,
I mean that's the truth. Yeah.
In essence, you're reflecting on everything you encounter.
Yes.
But we, as addicts and alcoholics, and being extreme examples of self-will riot, means we are extreme examples of not reflecting on shit. We don't. And so now we need a way to begin reflecting on how we affect the world. Right? This is about transforming the world. You can increase the overall consciousness of this planet by practicing this step. Okay? That's it for me and the 10th step. I turn it over to Brandon.
I'm surprised you could get all of that in that much. And all right, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation.
Cool.
All right, you guys ready for a break?
Yeah.
The... whenever we're in a meeting that's on the 11th step or around about the 11th step, what I generally hear, maybe you guys hear something different, but is we're talking about the 11th step and people talk about how I pray in the shower and I put my shoes underneath the bed so that I have to get down on my knees to put my shoes on. And but it's all about prayer, right? There's nothing. They don't talk about meditation ever, or hardly ever. Prayer is important, guys. Don't get me wrong, but meditation's like the chocolate chips in the ice cream, and the whipped cream, and the cherry, and all the caramel, and the little chocolate ants and stuff that you put. Like that. That's meditation. Prayer's vanilla ice cream. It's good. Fills you up a little bit, but if you really want it to go somewhere, you got to do something else with it. And so it says we shouldn't be shy on this matter. Better men than us are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. Works if we have the proper attitude and try it for a couple days and say it doesn't work and then quit. That's as we work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite, valuable suggestions. Then we've got all these questions. All these questions that are the evening review. That, you know, back on 85, it says, every day is the day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. It doesn't say that I get to do it 3 days and take four off. It says that every day is the day that I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. So then we've got this cool thing called the evening review. Now, I think I have a theory on why it comes first. Tarek has a different theory. I like Tarek's too, but I like mine a lot better. So when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Here are the questions. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind? Were we loving? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? You betcha. Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, what we could pack into the stream of life? Okay, those are our questions. I like to write mine out. The reason why I like to write mine out is because I can go back and review chunks of time. If I'm struggling with a particular thing, let's say work or something else, routinely, I can go back into my previous written evening reviews and say, I guess I had a buddy once, I called him and I was bitching about work. He goes, you know, like half the time you call me, you're bitching about work? And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, just about right at half. So I went back through my evening review. Let's say I had 50 of them. And in 25 of those cases, there was either a resentment or there was some dishonesty or there was some fear around work for 25 of the 50 days. Weird. About half the time I talked to him, I was bitching about work. what it did for me is by looking back at that, it gave me the ability to start really analyzing and going deep into an understanding of how I was showing up at work and changing some things. I actually ended up making a career change out of that because I tried really, really hard for a long time with God's help to do some different stuff at work, and it just seemed like I was just not happy there. Okay, but it wasn't like, you know, knee-jerk reaction, I'm quitting my job. It was, I had talked through it with other people. I had looked at the evening review. I had tried to make some modifications in my life. And after a while, a different opportunity opened up, and I did that. You had a question?
Yes. This is the 11th step talks about doing these things through prayer and meditation. Now, do you or am I allowed to take these things and look at them through our prayer and meditation, or do we always have to write them down?
Okay.
Good question.
Yeah. I like to do these questions written for the reason that I just said. I think you, more often than not, do them in a meditative state, right?
I contemplate them. When I do evening review, and I don't do it, I wrote it out for 2 years and did it almost daily for 2 years. I had that experience. Now it's more of, I might review that paragraph in bed. I will reflect on it and contemplate it, or it will be a part of my 11th step in the morning. But I don't write it out. You know, I take things into prayer and meditation. We can talk about that too. It's about practice.
The important thing is to do it, right? Mm-hmm. The other reason why I like to write mine out, and the reason why I do it in the evenings, is that I incorporate this into my morning discipline, and I'll explain to you how I do that as well. And if I wait to do this in the morning or later on, or if I do it just in my head, I have the tendency to kind of skate over stuff. And so you got to look at what works for you. I'm a guy that, like if I'm 30 minutes away, I'll tell you I'm 15 minutes away. The way that I counteract that now is Tara gets these texts all the time. GPS says I will be there at 1:07. Because Brandon says I'll be there at 1, and we'll be lying to you. So GPS says I'm going to be there at 1:07. You can use yourself to trick yourself to beat yourself, okay? It's really fun. Okay, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others, okay? So does anybody know what worry is? Future fear. Remorse and morbid reflection? Fear of the past. Where's the only place you experience God? So if you're in worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, you're not experiencing God and you're completely worthless. Okay? After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective action should be taken. Okay. Then I draw a line in my book, and then it's got this new section that says, on awakening, let us think about our 24 hours ahead. As part of my evening review, I actually write out my plans for the next day, because when I get to this point in the morning, I actually think I need plans for the day. Another reason why I like to write out my evening review is if I owe an apology, I actually have to schedule that in my day, or I'm going to think it's not important and I'll pass right over it. Had to do this before. I'd make it through the day, completely blind, get to the evening review, realize I've harmed some people. Oops, need to plan to actually make an amend tomorrow for that guy that pissed me off, right? So we consider our plans for the day before we begin. There's prayers all through here. God, direct my thinking. Please divorce it from self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. Okay? Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us our brains to use. Our thought life will be placed in a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of our wrong motives. My favorite question. What if every thought that you ever have is a prayer?
Oh, no, you didn't.
What if every thought that you ever have is actually a prayer? I asked this one time at one of our workshops, and the guy actually said out loud, well, those would be some pretty fucked up prayers. Okay, but it talks about our thought life, right? So let's say our thoughts are actually prayers. And if our thoughts are actually prayers, it would probably serve me to clean up my thoughts, right? Okay. Now this evening review thing's a little more important. Maybe I should spend some more time looking at how I'm showing up in relationships. In the 11th step, it says later on, be quick to see where religious people are right, make use of what they offer. That which opens the door up to a lot of these books that Tarek and I read. This one's called Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox. The actual explanation of a man's life lies in just the fact that he is essentially spiritual and eternal. And that this world and the life that we know intellectually is, so to speak, a cross-section of the full truth concerning him and a cross-section of everything, from a machine to a horse, never can furnish even a partial explanation of the whole. So what that says is that you can take any element of reality and it is not reality. It's a part of. Goes on to say, here's one of those where, maybe our thoughts actually mean something. All day long, the thoughts that occupy your mind, your secret place, as Jesus calls it, are molding your destiny for good or evil. In fact, the truth is that the whole of your life's experience is but the outer expression of inner thought. Scary, isn't it? If your prayers are not being answered, search your consciousness and see if there is not someone who you have yet to forgive. Because it goes on to say that if you cannot forgive at present, you will have to wait to make your demonstration until you can. So what it's saying in here, in the whole paragraph, is that if you're not getting the things that you want through prayer, according to the Lord's Prayer, you ain't going to get yours. Are amends important? I don't know. Maybe. A man is literally what he thinks. His character being the complete sum of all of his thoughts. Every man is where he is by the law of his being. The thoughts which he has built into his character have brought him there. And in the arrangement of his life, there is no element of chance, but all is the result of the law which cannot err.
Okay, go for it. So somebody is sitting in this room right now is like, these guys are crazy. I can't control my thinking. But you can begin to practice certain tools that will guide you out of thinking into a new level of consciousness or a new way of thinking. And that's the important part here. I cannot control the thoughts that just appear out of nowhere in my mind. But what I can do is implement a practice that's based on nurturing communication with what I call God. And that will help with adjusting the thought life. Okay, because I do think to a certain degree, what you resist will persist in your life. You can create your own reality because you're identified with that cognitive process that's going on. And for some reason, when identified with a specific cognitive process, it seems like the things that keep showing up in your reality are associated with that cognitive process, whatever you're thinking about. And so I know a lot of you are like, again, damn, dude, I just want to stop shooting dope. What the hell are you guys talking about? But this is about the spiritual life. The spiritual life is not a theory. It has to be lived. And so Brandon and I are sharing practices with you that we have found very effective. Because trust me, the authors of this book and what Brandon is reading right now, they think our thinking is pretty jacked up. Because they use the word thought or thought life many times on page 86, 87, and 88. They're trying to tell us something. Don't think. Right? Adjust your thought life.
Men do not attract that which they want, but that which they are. Circumstance does not make the man, it reveals it to himself.
Oh, that one always hurts.
Ooh, wait. So wait a second. If this is the case, that all of my troubles are really, really of my own making because my mind put them there. If I just want to stop shooting dope and that's all I think about, what am I thinking about all the time? Shooting dope. Got to clean the mind. Got to find a different way. Okay? So then we go, so now you understand the reason why it's maybe important to get into some of this 11-step practice, right? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Maybe I'm crazy. That's cool. I'm good with that. And thinking about our day, we may face indecision. Anybody ever face indecision over the course of their day? We may not be able to determine which course of action to take. Anybody? Here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision. And then these awesome promises that you're going to have to go to therapy for 67 years to get. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. What used to be a hunch or occasional inspiration gradually becomes part of the working mind. Practice, 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 practice. Want to go to the gym? You want to throw up a couple plates on the bench bar on each side? You walk in the first day, you try to do that? What are the chances? Nope. Show up at the gym every day, you do it for a little while, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt at least for the first couple weeks. Build up some stamina. Then how easy is it? Not so bad. Not so bad. Practice, practice, practice. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find our thinking, as time passes, will become more and more in the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. I got geeked out on intuition early on in sobriety, and it's something that I just love. I get laughed at often because of the way that I follow it. But as I follow it more and more, what I learn is that signal's clear, that one's not. Well, there has to be a way for me to clean the signal up, right? So there was this guy, his name was Marconi. He invented this thing called the radio receiver, right? And as he was working on inventing it, his friends tried to commit him because he was saying that we can transmit sound over the airwaves and receive it somewhere else. Magic. Dude's crazy. Do you guys think the radio's crazy today? Yeah. Oh, we do pictures and all sorts of files and all sorts of other stuff over the airwaves now. We don't think twice about it. They thought Marconi was crazy, right? So, to give you a good analogy, I believe that the intuitive thought coming from God is constantly being broadcast to you. Now, there are only a couple people in this room that I think will know what I'm talking about, but back when you used to watch TV, you had the TV that had the two dials. You had the UHF and the VHF, and then you had to get the rabbit ears just right, and you'd crunch the aluminum on the ends of it just to get it right. And you would get that signal just perfect, and the picture would be clear. And then like 10 minutes later, it would be, and you're like, whoa, nothing changed. Nothing changed. So you would have to go, and you'd have to, And what was weird is it was fine like this before. Now you had to do it like this. Now the picture's clear. And it's like, that doesn't make sense. It should have just been like right there. But it was a completely different place, right? Well, so there was constant adjustment. And then, you know, cable came along and then whatever. I mean, we don't need that antenna stuff anymore, right? But so to me, that's meditation. is that the signal's out there. The problem is I don't know how to tune it in. And when I sit in my quiet, still place, what happens is I start to receive the signal. And it generally sticks around for a while. And over the course of the day, then I'm hooked up with whatever this thing is that's telling me to go here, do this, show up here, call that guy, call him. He answers, he's like, man, I'm so glad you called. I'm in the middle of something right now that I just need to talk about. Weird, how'd that happen? You do these things, meditation, not only does it quiet the mind, it allows you to interact with other people. The record for me is five thoughts. I have actually been in a conversation with a person, and as if their file folders had five other thoughts lined up here, and I was playing with each thought as I'm engaged in a conversation and sitting there observing all this from the inside of my head or wherever I am and realizing, this is kind of wacky, man, that I've got all this that I'm keenly aware of. Can't happen if I don't meditate. Because for me, for Tarek, for anybody that actually does the spiritual practice on a regular basis, the meditative thought that comes through intuition is this really still, quiet thought that seems to come first. And then the thinking mind's next, and the thinking mind's real loud. So if I listen to the thinking mind constantly, it squashes the other one. But then if I know how to say, okay, thinking mind, time out, you're over here, I can listen to the other one. Okay? So if I start to do that, I can send thinking mind into timeout so that that crazy thought that is, I believe is actually creating my future, I can put him in timeout to focus on the other one long enough to clean up the guy that's in timeout. So now it becomes easy to create the future that I want through my thoughts.
What's the music to the Twilight Zone?
Who in here, when they're in the car, has to have some stuff going on? Yeah. Got the radio on, commercial comes on, change it. Yeah. Radio on, no, don't like that song. Tarek and I and another guy our size and a smaller guy went to this this Buddhist place to go experience this talk by this saint, and they had put paper down on the floor, and there's rows of chairs very similar to these, and it happened to be that there were a lot of Asians there, and then there was, you know, us large men, and it was fascinating because, like, when the thing was over, like, all these smaller, more serene people seemed to kind of like get up from their chair, and like their chair was in the exact spot that it started in. You look below our chairs, like the paper's all torn from us, like just, you know, moving around. And because we, although we're pretty still, we hadn't reached that level of just peace that these people had. I often go on road trips for work that take me from 4 in the morning on Thursday all the way until like 9 o'clock at night at Friday. I do sleep in there somewhere. And I can do that entire trip, in most cases, in complete silence. I may have some phone conversations and things like that, but that was not possible before. That was not in any way. I was the guy that had to have stuff going on. You build upon this meditation thing. And then the prayer becomes easier. And then the prayers become cleaner. The thoughts become cleaner. And if you're one of those people that your God's real formal and it's in the chair and you have to bow to it and you have to speak real formally to it, cool. That's not my God. My God and I have a lot of conversations. There's a lot of cussing. I cuss at them. They cuss at me. You've got to have a relationship with this thing that makes sense to you, or you're not going to want to do this stuff. Don't take somebody else's God and say, that's it. Figure yours out. If somebody tells you this is what God is, ask them why. When did you decide that? Is it possible that there's more? Is it possible that everything that you think you know about anything connected to your life, is it possible there's more? A little bit possible? Because to me, I can talk for 12 more hours about just this step, just the 11th step. But I noticed that some people's eyes are starting to droop a little bit, and you guys probably need your stuff, because you don't meditate like I do, and you can't sit here for multiple hours and be okay. And that's okay, because you're where you are, and that's very important. And as you cultivate this practice, your stamina will increase, your ability to tolerate things will be increased, and what you do in 11 directly correlates to what you do in 10. Have you ever noticed how when you're having a bad day, a bunch of stuff keeps going wrong? World's full of energy, guys. Are you attracting good stuff to you or bad stuff to you? This is where you clean it up. Take a 15-minute break.